Welcome again to another episode of the Tech Marketing Podcast. I'm super excited to have another wonderful together with us today. But before I get started, I'm going to hand over to my co-host, Harry, to say hello. Harry, say hello.
Hello. And by the way, just an absolute humdinger of an intro from you there, John.
Thanks very much. But we are super excited to be joined by one of our wonderful media team here today, Steffi. Steffi, you're joining us from London. How is everything over in the capital today?
It's very good. The sun is shining. No, I'm joking. It's not shining at all. But hey, it's great.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. Like, how did you come to joining together?
Yeah, so I've been working in agencies for in media agency for the past 8 years, different agencies in London, and I think about in B2B tech, it's been about 6 years, and I got brought to together. When the media department opened by Mike, which is used to be my boss back in my previous agency. And well, this opportunity opened up in together to start a new fresh team, like a bit of a startup, and you know, couldn't say no, right?
We've just been nominated for a record-breaking number of awards. I think it's 14. Ooh. Is that right?
Wow.
Is it 14 B2B awards? I'm really hoping I've got that right. Otherwise, Alex is going to slap my wrist. But you know, one of the ones we're super excited to get you on today's podcast to talk about is the Aviva campaign, which has just been nominated for the Best Brand Initiative. So, you know, firstly, congratulations. You know, can you start by telling us a little bit about the campaign goal and what it was there to achieve? Like, you know, what made this campaign so special?
Of course. Yeah, we also were quite excited about that, as so much work went into this campaign. So I was quite pleased when we got nominated. So I guess after Aviva merged with Schneider Electric, so it turns their industrial software even a stronger global platform. They were already market leader back then, but they were competing with a lot of big guys like Oracle, SAP, Microsoft, to name a few, and in competitive verticals like water, energy, food. So the real problem they had is to differentiate themselves. And that's how it all started. They needed to drive awareness, differentiate themselves to get to this, the operational decision makers, which are the target audience. And so from there, we undertook extensive research around the audience, industry, competitors, and that helped us to develop that differentiating creative messaging, which is making industry human, really. And then we brought to life this into a multi-touch digital campaign. This is how it all started, really.
So you talked about we had to do some research to understand how to differentiate their brand. I mean, I think all of our listeners right now are thinking, well, I want to differentiate my brand. Like, I want to be able to make us stand out. Is this a common challenge among, you know, among the clients that you work with in B2B tech?
It is, you know. Any brand will likely to be operating in a very competitive market, and there will be established brand, there will be, you know, challenges brand mm-hmm. come in and push the boundaries. So it's important really to assess where you stand as a brand and mm-hmm. your aspiration, whether you want to go, as well as know your audience really well. So, so we do come across with a lot of different ones, and differentiating is one of the biggest problem that you've had.
Yeah.
I just feel I need to ask this nice and early in the podcast, okay? What is it you actually did, you know? Like, what did you do, okay? Like, I understand why it was good, okay? But what was it that you did that was good? As in, are you buying banners? What are you doing?
Okay.
Like, just explain the very basics of your job to me. That's basically what I'm saying.
Okay, well, I mean, obviously there were different components to the campaign. One was the differentiation came, you know, two ways. One, from a messaging standpoint, so you need to have a message to break through mm-hmm. and differentiate yourself, and then how you do, you know, put out there in the market the message.
Yeah.
So, and that's more where my job is, right? So the second part, as a background, I'm a media planner and buyer. So when it comes to campaign architecture and channel mix, that's where basically how we decide to amplify this message and make sure that we were reaching the right audience. And so I think it was a bit of a, I don't know, I don't want to say a special campaign, but we were certainly, when we came up with the strategy, we didn't know that we were going to get through a pandemic. And I think obviously the channel mix, the specific channel mix and strategy that you put together, it depends, you know, on a lot of factors that are business objective that you set up for the specific campaign, but also budget and time frame. How long do you want to be in the market for? What's the fans you've got available and the objective you want to achieve? And taking into account all of that, we came up with a digital multi-touch campaign approach, and where we were really leaning towards making sure we were deploying basically and making the most of the very sophisticated targeting capabilities that were available to us through display, programmatic, paid social, and to make sure we were reaching all the multiple verticals that Aviva wanted to reach in a very, as I say, targeted and cost-effective way. So, and that allow, yeah?
So you find the geezers, the ladies and geezers, that you want to target, okay? And then you find ways to get the appropriate media in front of them on various platforms.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, I would say. You know, we wanted to be in market for quite a long time. And what we wanted to do is just to be front of mind of our audience and to make the most of our budget. We also wanted to be cost effective, right, and be there as long as possible. So the digital first approach on the biddable platform that we decided to, you know, to introduce as part of our strategy to, as the bulk of our strategy, really helped us to achieve that always on long-term approach and being front of mind for a long time and apply that cost-effectiveness, targeted efficiencies, you know, all of these objectives that we wanted to achieve at the time, we felt that was the right approach.
Yeah. You mentioned it was digital first, Steffi. Did we start this campaign, and I'm probably going to try and avoid using the C word, but before all of this kicked off, did we plan it before we were in this pandemic? Or have we been adapting it throughout the last 18 months?
So that was the approach that we planned originally, and as I say, as we wanted to make sure we were cost effective, we were agile in our optimization, and we were also able to deploy that always on approach over a 10 months time frame. So that was already the bulk of it. I think there had been a lot of adjustment that we had to go through. For example, I'm thinking about Black Lives Matter, the US election, COVID itself, and sorry.
Is that something that you, this is something I'm interested in, I might drag you a little bit off the topic, okay? But you guys, media guys, okay, bunch of sexy Europeans hanging out in London in an office together. Now, when...
True story.
When something happens, it's true, you get on the media team, like, hola, que pasa, we've got no media for you. Anyway, so let's say something happens, you know, let's say Black Lives Matter, okay? Do you guys all then scramble and be like, okay, we need some media for this. We need to be hopping on this type of thing. Or do you guys just be like, we've done our thing? Or if something massive happens, do you have to like readjust like how you are handling social media and the like that? Do you have to, when you're agile, are you reactive like that? Is that something that you have to take into account?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously we need to know where we operate. We operate in the real world, and you know, brands are not siloed, you know, and obviously there are some decisions that are taken at the brand level, and that might impact then the campaign you've got in market. So we need to be able to select which are the, let's call them events that, you know, have a crucial importance, and we need to have conversation with our client to reflect on how we should address and what we should do as a result of what's happening, and as obviously brand themselves will have their own, guidelines and specific topics they associate and resonate with, and they need to decide how they do behave in market and how in relation to specific events that are happening. There might be they don't have they don't change the way they operate, or because they're very close to a specific topic and they have already brand initiatives around that. They decide, for example, to pose a campaign, to go dark, or it can be decision like there are the US election. We don't want to distract our target audience. It's not going to be engaged with us. We decide to dial down our campaign. So that's a lot. We need to have this meaningful conversation with our clients and take decision that needs to be done in a timely manner, basically.
I think it's a really key thing. Like, I've always said, like, one of my favorite adverts, Steffi, one of my favorite pieces of media, and it's a B2C campaign. I believe it was Oreos for the Super Bowl sometime in, about 5-6 years ago. And do you remember there was that incident at the Super Bowl where the lights went out for like a few minutes? They posted, it was within something like 2 or 3 minutes, this banner ad that said, "You don't need lights to eat Oreos." And they literally managed to get this copy written, put on a banner and posted out to the social networks and to, I think, as a display ad. And I just thought that was a brilliant example of agility in marketing. And you mentioned the agile word earlier. Like, would you say all of those events unfolded through 2020? Like, was it a regular occurrence to be quite drastically tweaking the campaign based on, based on what's happening in market? And I would say, it'd be great to hear an example of where we may have done that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we needed to have a regular conversation with our client. You know, an example I made it before, with all the conversation that were happening through, for example, closer to the US election, there was a decision to really heavily dial down the campaign, as at the end of the day we want to make sure that we do spend wisely the fans of our clients, and that didn't feel like it was the right way to do that, so that's dialing down. That's an example. Other things that happen and change, for example, promotion around specific events intensifying, or different channel we wanted to use that were going beyond the digital space, we had to remove completely and change plan, as these weren't happening, not digitally or in person. And no one, last year knew how long the pandemic was going to last for.
But I mean, let's bring us back to the brand initiative for a second, right? Back to this brand building piece, because in B2B, there is always this focus on demand gen. There's always this like need to be like, we've got to be seeing new leads, we've got to be seeing revenue. And it can be so easily forgotten to think about your brand perception and how you're seen in the market. Like, we see this as a really common challenge in Together, don't we? If we're giving our listeners, if they're facing a similar challenge, what advice would you give them to kind of carve out their brand building approach? Like, how would you start them in the right direction, Steffi?
Well, we probably briefly spoke about that earlier, but it's to know where you stand and to know in relation to your competitors, to know really well your audience, and to keep tracking that. So having a brand study in place, it's the first step. Because
like a benchmark,
yeah.
Like, you need to have something to improve on.
How do you conduct a brand study? Do you send out questionnaires to businesses, or?
Well, that's we do have capabilities in house to do that, or we can rely on different partners for that, or that's something that obviously a client can also introduce and run independently. There are different methodology in there as well, but that's most likely panel base and with a number of questions over email or telephone, and it can be as detailed as you want. But that's something that I do feel a brand should have independently from the fact that they do run brand campaign or not, because that really helps you to understand, as I say, where you stand as a brand in relation to your competitors and across different verticals and geos, and track the progress over time.
do you, when you get the results back on a brand thing, okay, let's say we're a brand and our results come back that we are seen as very boring and incredibly reliable, okay? That's like our thing. It's like, you know, no bells and whistles, bog standard, very reliable, like we're Kias, like basically, or something like that, okay? Do you choose to lean into that type of thing, or do you like, okay, we need to zest ourselves up? Like, how do you make the decision? Once you got the results back, how do you know whether it's good or bad and what you want to change and what you want to just kind of exemplify or push?
Yeah, so again, the reason, I mean, there's a number of factors that impact in there. For example, when it came to Aviva, the decision on which verticals to focus on and geos for this specific campaign was based on a brand study result. So they identified some sector where they had lower level of awareness and consideration, as well as geo, they were more crucial from a business perspective. And based on that, that's how we made the decision of where to focus the campaign on. And that's super important. And then you track progress over time, and that helps you to understand how you move the needle against your competitor. And plus, you can track quite a lot of things, also how you know, the perception or the brand association against specific attributes you want to make sure you're perceiving that way from your audience, and give you quite a lot to think of. And that's really marry up with your aspiration as a brand and helps you to benchmark and understand if you're going in the right direction and how you, again, where are you in comparison to your competitors?
Okay. So like, you'll do a little study, and I went to uni in Norwich, and I happen to know that everyone in Norwich knows who Aviva is. Okay. I think they're like the biggest employer in Norwich. And so you might find, okay, everyone in Norwich knows who they are. Liverpool doesn't know what Aviva's about. So you'll be like, let's not advertise in Norwich. Let's go for Liverpool. That type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, you want to find out, yeah, if they know them, if they will consider them, if they had to buy an industrial software, and if they will be their first choice. And then you try to understand, okay, they know them, but they wouldn't consider, okay, what do I need to do then? That's how we should make our decision, you know, before understanding that. And on top of that, obviously, you need that. That's the brand study. And then you need to know really well your audience and do research, because then you need to understand how does your audience take decision, or what's the media consumption of your target audience, because that's how then it shape out, you know, your messaging differentiation we were talking before, and how you shape out your channel mix and campaign to make sure you reach them and you are front of mind.
I think what we're talking about here with a lot of this brand building is this kind of pre-campaign brand surveys to establish that benchmark, right? So when you really drill down into it, like, what were the most important KPIs to track throughout that campaign? Like, what were the call-out figures that you would look up and hope to see improve? What metrics do we use in those type of situations?
Yeah, so there will be, the brand study can track a lot of things, definitely awareness. So as Harry was saying, how many people know Aviva in Norwich, that can be prompted or unprompted, so reference it to a list of brand or not. Consideration, first choice, and then obviously you want to see the uplift and the impact after a specific brand promotion versus a pre-promotion period.
Prompted and unprompted brand surveys. Prompted is where you ask someone, like, have you heard of this brand, yes or no, isn't it? And unprompted is where you might get someone to, is it like almost fill in the brand blind? Is that right? Are those the...
Yeah, that's correct. Let's say prompted, there is a drop-down menu with the number of that. Let's say Aviva is one of those in relation to that specific product. And then unprompted is like, which brand comes to your mind when thinking about industrial software?
Got
so
it.
Yeah, there's no reference to any specific brand. So
you're always going to get much lower responses with unprompted, right? Because you're relying on memory,
yeah,
essentially. But both of those together help you get a good benchmark on, have people heard of this brand? Do they understand it? Got it. And then consideration is much more around, would you consider this brand when looking for this product, I guess?
Yeah.
Is it as simple as a question, or are there particular ways of measuring it?
Yeah, I think I mean, you can go in nuances in how you phrased it, but it's as simple as that. It's how you, if you would consider this brand for that. Yeah.
But for this particular, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully award-winning campaign, which one of those metrics was the standout one that you felt gave you the most information to plan the campaign? Or did you have to use a combination of all of them?
Yeah, I think we did track all of them. We did track all of them across different verticals, because Vivendasso Software operates across quite a number of industry verticals, as well as different geos. So I think the information we got in there was that general level awareness was very high, but with differences across verticals. For example, energy has been traditionally where Aviva have been known most, so we were not surprised to see that we were ranking quite high in there, whereas, for example, that there had to be some work to be done more around the food and beverage or consumer packaged goods kind of verticals in there. And then I think where we had to work a little bit more was on the consideration side of things. Hence, as I say, to differentiate the brand to make that jump.
Yeah, yeah. So in this case, they were quite established in a few verticals. But we've worked on some other brand campaigns recently for brand new companies that have completely rebranded. Was the approach similar, or did we have to tweak it a lot for some of those other brands? And in this case, I'm talking about precisely Steffi. Like, how did the mix and KPIs kind of change for some of these other brands?
Well, I guess that's right. It was a completely different example of a brand that it was completely rebranded after a merger. So the name, you know, wasn't known in the market. The brand campaign and promotion in there was, the purpose of that was to really start building that completely brand building from scratch, really, against the target audience. There was no brand study in place, so the company didn't have
a benchmark to start from. Yeah.
Yeah, a benchmark, and for the purpose of this initial campaign, it wasn't in scope a brand study, but we did run a sort of let's call it mini brand study in a way, partnered with one very established publisher, which I don't know if I can name, but there was really tracking the same things: awareness, consideration, first choice, and pre and post.
Yep.
The content promotion. So we really ran a number of and promoted a number of thought leadership kind of content pieces in there, and what we could see, there was a massive uplift in awareness, really, which is where we needed to make an impact. I think it was plus 800%, but it wasn't surprised that the publication has a very good affinity with the target audience we were looking, obviously, to reach.
Yep.
And the brand wasn't known at all. So we were looking at, we were probably around zero awareness. And then there was a, you know, the uplift was...
I mean, it's the kind of brands that I love working with, right? The challenger brands.
Yeah.
The ones where you can make a real difference, isn't it?
But I guess the bottom line in here is, like, you need to start from somewhere. Obviously, the initial part, it's easier because it's increment. You're going to get a faster uplift, right? But then when you're going back to Aviva, when you are already an established brand and the problem is differentiation, that's why... You know, you need to be, so brand building is a long-term play, right? And you're not down when people know you. You need to keep fighting for that position, you know, as the market keeps changing. So that's important of keeping tracking it over time and just taking action and build that presence continuously.
One thing that strikes my head that we always struggle with in B2B, right? Doing a brand awareness campaign in B2C is easy. Like, have you heard of Coke Zero? You know, it's fast moving consumer goods are especially easy because, you know, you have such a wide and a breadth of market to draw from. You can ask thousands of people and get a really, you know, relatively accurate view of your brand awareness and engagement. While in B2B, when you're operating in such specific niches, what level of engagement with a brand survey do you need to get an accurate view of where you need to where we need to focus our time? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, I guess we are getting into statistic in here, yeah. And how significant is a sample.
Yep.
It's important, and but yeah, we also need to be realistic. But having around at least 300 respondents, I think that's where we are. I think that's where we are.
And how often did we ask that question? Like 300 respondents, but do we ask once a quarter, once a month? Like how often were we going out and getting those responses?
I think that, yeah, once you start, and that's your first true benchmark, I think probably having at least two brands studied per year will...
Good, got it.
Will help you to really have a good pacing and understand how you're progressing. Obviously, as each brand have different promotional time frame and are in market with different campaigns, it's important to align the cadence with what you're doing internally and what you want to track. But yeah.
If you had to send out that brand survey again, all right, we're starting back at scratch, all right, but Aviva says to you, we only want one question on the survey, what would that question be?
God, well, I guess this is $1 million question. It's very hard. That's really the beauty of a brand study, is that you can go into details and it helps you to track and customize the question and to be quite detailed if you want to have a very detailed strategy and approach off the back of it. So I'm very politely pushing back on these questionnaires. Yes, there isn't really a question that is going to get you that level of details, if that makes sense.
So just to keep, you know, we've talked a lot about KPIs because I find that brand study piece absolutely fascinating. But obviously... the most important element is how we change the results of that brand study. What was the different mix for, in this case, this wonderful award-winning campaign versus the other campaign we've talked about for the brand new brand? Like, what were the different mixes that we used? And kind of what were the key learnings that you took away from that, Steffi?
I guess, the decision on which geo and which vertical to go after was based on the pre-campaign brand study, and the specific channel mix and strategy was also based on business objective, budget and time frame, obviously. And we mentioned about the digital first approach and how we deployed and over a 10 months time frame. In terms of learnings, I think we learn a lot on how audience were resonated different depending on the verticals and on the different geos. For example, we see a lot of traction and engagement from Germany, from the Latin country compared to US, where the market is a little bit more competitive and it's a little bit harder to break through. I think, yeah, we learn a lot about the channel, and we are actually now in market with a new campaign, which is back to that long play brand building. It's building on this result, and what we've learned is which are the specific targeting strategies that work best across the different channel, which were the format that worked best. For example, video was a absolute protagonist in there, and that's a very powerful format for awareness, so we kept building on and capitalizing on that. We introduced, for example, new channels, again, keeping learning on the media consumption habit. I think this year what we're looking to do is just to introduce an audio element. You know, podcasts have become very popular, and our target audience is quite engaged, so we don't want to, we want to be brave, we want to make sure that we go after, this older channel where we feel, we'll have traction. So that's important that we evolve our strategy to include and test new channels, and we understand also how to differentiate. We now have quite a big chunk of that data then tell us what works best, for example, across the different verticals we went after. We are now in the position of slightly tweaking and differentiating our strategy across the different verticals and geos. And that's super powerful because it helps you to be way more cost effective and, well, making your budget work harder, really. But
by having all,
by having that data. I hope I've answered. Yeah.
By having all that data, it makes you be able to know exactly where to push your funds. Is that what you're saying, Steffi?
Yeah, it is, in a more intelligent way. So you make, you've learned that, so you know already that where you're going to put your money in to make them work harder. And then you can use everything else to expand your presence and look at, for example, new channels. We talk about audio programmatic podcast, for example. We can look back, for example, events in if this year works out with that, and going even into potentially other channel like specific partnership, let's say, that go even outside the digital space. So it gives you the freedom to use the fund in a smarter way, let's say, having that data and benchmarks.
Got it. And just to bring us back to like the two campaigns we've been talking about here, one which was a brand new rebranding exercise for Zero Awareness. It sounds like we had the most success there with a direct media partnership that had a high affinity with the brand in the brand's target market in question. But with Aviva, we've used a real mix of, you mentioned display, programmatic, paid social, search, a broad mix across those different channels, really, including audio, as it sounds like as well, which is great. Harry and I are available for hire. You had to tweak those up and down per geo to really achieve that consistent growth in the brand. Is that a good summary, Steffi?
It is. Actually, audio is going to be part of, this coming year strategy. So we're quite keen to test how this is going. But yeah, it is a good summary. We have also done some small ad hoc tactical direct partnership with some publication within specific verticals where we did directly sponsor some placement within those specific website that had that high affinity with our target audience, but nothing to do with that partnership that we ran for precisely. But again, the campaign were very different. Aviva, we were looking at the long term, always on approach, whereas for precisely it was more of a big burst. So again, that's super important to set your campaign objective at the beginning.
So let's talk about that always on approach though. So why is that so fundamental to the success of brand campaigns? Like why is always on so such a recommended approach?
As we say, long brand awareness is a long-term play, and a month-long campaign, it will certainly help you to generate an uplift, but it's not going to consolidate your position within the market at that takes time. So as the market continuously change, you need to be there all the time to build that presence and be front of mind of your audience. So if you're not there, someone else will be, and you don't want that to happen, basically.
I think there's this great, I forgot, we recorded a podcast a few weeks ago, and it will be coming out slightly after this one, Steffi, around the effects of network memory. And one thing that strikes me in my mind, especially when we talk about brand awareness, and I've forgotten the exact term here, but there's a scientific body. You know what it's like when someone tells you a fact and you can actually recall it the next day, but then over time, that knowledge drifts off. There's essentially a gradient, and it's well proven that over time, of course, our ability to recall facts and knowledge drifts off. And I think it's the same with brand, really, isn't it? You have to do this at a network scale. You have to constantly keep topping up the audience with messaging about your brand to remind them that you're still there. Otherwise, that memory will just start to fade. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, that's it, totally. And that's happened to B2C, but also B2B
I think that plus the network element is really key. Like you can't, you know, this isn't about reminding individual people about the brand, although that's really what we are doing at the end of the day. It's about reminding the, you know, the whole audience about it and keep and topping that up quite regularly. But it's, you know, we have to remember, I believe it's called the memory gradient, you know, that does fade over time. That's been a fantastic set of tips there that we've been going through. Like, one thing I've been hearing, you know, you've got to make sure you establish your benchmark. You've got to make sure you're always on to keep topping up that brand knowledge. And probably the most important element here I'm hearing is you've got to keep testing and learning. Like, you can't rest on your laurels and expect the campaign to keep performing. You've got to measure and tweak to get the most out of the budget. I mean, what advice for me as an ex software developer, like, talking about agile and tweaking things live, like, just feels like a no brainer. But what advice would you give to other marketeers to establish that test and learn approach?
I would say to be very structured in your approach. And to explain that is, like, select two variables at a time. For example, you have X creative messages across different targeting strands, and decide what's the length of time you're going to be in market for this test before evaluating results. And really, from my experience, and less is more, and it will give you more solid and actionable results than wanting to test a lot of things. I've seen that happening many times, and you test a lot of things, and then at the end of it, you don't know what's the results, and then you start back from scratch. So really, structure is everything. Less is more. Two variables at a time, specific length of time, and here you go. You've got your timeline, and then you know at the end of that, you know you take the learning and you implement back.
I think I absolutely love that advice, Steffi. I cannot tell you, and it apply. I would say to all of our listeners that applies to more than just media optimization. Like,
I agree.
Like, the amount of campaigns that I've worked with, the amount of marketing activity, if that doesn't even matter, campaigns like products, anything where we've got relationships.
Yeah.
We've got 2 weeks in, and then we've decided to change our goalposts and not even measure where we were, or the cardinal sin, which is try and measure about 10 different things. And not really know what you're optimizing for. So, like, I absolutely love that advice. I think that's brilliant. Let's put, like, one of the key things that always stood out for me when we started it together working in media was this mix between brand and demand gen. Like, what are the different roles they play when working together, and what is the right mix of those two disciplines?
Yeah, so again, this is another $1 million question everyone wants the answer to. But
it's normally how I want to spend my $1 million.
Though, yeah. Which
bucket do I spend it in? So yeah, it is the $1 million question, or the $10 million question, depending on how much your budget is.
The $10 million question is, do you have $10 million?
Yeah. If you do have $10 million, do please contact us, because we would love to have... Yeah, we'd love to have some more.
Yeah, leave my number at the end of it.
But sorry, Steffi, like, it is the one. What's the answer to that question?
Again, oh God, I need to. I'm not avoiding the answer, but again, there's no one size fits all approach. There are studies out there that help you, you know, to answer this question. The most famous, probably everyone's familiar, every marketer is familiar with, is the Bean Adam Fields one. They indicate 60-40. Brand demand ratio, which is the optimum, but that's quite a number of caveats, which are, well, driven by context specific characteristic, let's say. But I would say the most important thing is that you actually need both brand building and demand.
Yep.
Which sounds an obvious thing, but it's not. And that's because brand will drive this growth in the long term. And we support building things like penetration and being front of mind, and hence supporting also generating loyalty. Whereas demand generates short-term sales uplift, because at the end of the day, brands want to look at, obviously, sales and pipeline, and that will help a brand to be more efficient in their growth. So finding the striking the right balance, it's the most complex things, but you definitely need both of them.
I mean, I'm going to ask an obvious question here. Like, why is demand favored by marketeers? Like, we all know why, because they love sales, but like, is there any more insight you can give, you know, running these large campaigns, running these $1 million campaigns? Like, why is demand favored so much by marketeers and brand underestimated?
So if you think the most organizations have got sales and pipeline quarterly or even monthly targets, that most of the time they are, the only target that we look at, or the most important one, it's often the case that they have to adopt, is it shorter missed a word at all? But basically there's a shorter missed approach really in there, which is driven by that. And obviously, this is clashing with when you look at brand, as we said before, this is brand building is a long term play. So that's quite the obvious answer.
I think that's so true. You know, a lot of the companies we work for, of course, are let's say stock market driven. So they are driven by when they report their results to market. And there's that short term view of we need to keep showing demand, we need to keep showing uplift. But I would say if you're a marketer and you're listening to this and you're just thinking demand gen, like you're not, you need to be thinking long term if you want to see that number go up. Because all you're doing is creating a rod for your own back by just driving the same leads over and over again. You need to find ways of creating new awareness to drive new demand.
There's a saying in jiu-jitsu, okay? Here's my metaphor for you, all right? It's position before submission, okay? So you'll find that athletes, oftentimes they'll see a little opening, okay? And a lesser athlete might jump for that opening at the chance to win this match, okay? But it might be a 50, 60% chance of getting the finish if you dive for that. But the best athletes see those opportunities and go, no, not yet. I'm going to get this to a point where it's a 90% finish. I'm going to stay where I am and focus on solidifying where I am right now to the point where this guy's hopeless, and then I'll go for the finish. And that's kind of similar, you know, as opposed to being like, okay, I think we can get a sale here. It's like, no. Let's focus on making this brand so powerful that you don't even have to worry about sales anymore.
I completely agree. Like, actually, I really like the duct tape marketing approach, which of defining your funnel here, right? Which is know, like, trust, try, buy, right? And it's the same as awareness, consideration, et cetera, but like those first few stages of, they've got to know your brand, they've got to understand, they've got to like what you have to say, and they've got to trust it. Like those three are really brand awareness. They're not necessarily demand. And so the more you can do to build that before you hit them with a demand gen campaign, like your position before submission there, Harry, you know, I think the more likely they are to convert. I mean, Steffi, do you see any stats from the campaigns that we've worked on where your brand awareness has driven an increase in conversion at all?
Well, we do have, and as we know, this is a difficult task, obviously, to prove that. What we've been trying to do is to build case studies where they show this uplift, but there isn't a specific stats that tells you, you know, exactly that. But we need to support also this piece and help justifying that from when our clients, for example, you know, need to bring, you know, and convince their stakeholders, obviously, to invest into brand. What we're trying to do is just to build case studies and showcase what's been the impact over time of a specific campaign on return on investment and on pipeline. And obviously numbers, you know, the language of numbers is going to be the most effective ones. And that's what we're trying to build, you know, this credible you know, library of case studies that showcase that. As we know, it's a very difficult task, and I feel the pain.
Yeah, no, and I think I'm completely with you, Steffi. Like, it is the biggest challenge that we hear come up and up again in you know, B2B, but especially brand building is, and demand gen is attribution, and it can be, you know, it's difficult with demand gen enough to be able to build an attribution model. You're adding brand building into that. Like, how do it can be so difficult to measure it. But I think we've had a great discussion today about how some of those brand awareness studies, those surveys, the questions, you know, the questions that we talked about could help to at least build some benchmarks to know you're moving in the right direction. But, you know, just closing off on this demand gen piece, like, how can our listeners help to change the perception and to prove the value of brand building to their stakeholders? Like, what could they go in with to let's say you're a marketer, you're listening to this podcast now, and you know that you're spending 90 to 100% of your budget just on demand gen. Like, what could we tell them to change their perception?
Well, we can tell them to start running brand studies and create that benchmark. And yep. That's a solid internal measurement that will help you over time to understand where you stand. And, you know, that's really helpful. If you don't run any brand promotion and you keep tracking results and you don't move the needle, then you have your answer back, I guess. Yep. Then know more your audience. You know, you'd be surprised, but again, it's obviously time and money invested as well in, you know, researching around your audience behavior, your market and competitors. But they're really well spent, and this will bring, you know, a lot of value. Will help you to understand how you can differentiate yourself. So really, really, this is an important piece. And then, well, in terms of changing the perception, again, it's probably test and learn the impact of the campaign you do. But again, I will also advise to be a little bit bold and innovative with your campaigns, because, yep. Well, if you want to differentiate yourself, you need to do something that other people are not doing and stand out in yep. there and do
yeah,
it well.
I completely agree. Of course, my passion, of course, is innovation. So I'm going to do nothing yeah. other than completely agree with that point wholeheartedly. So just closing up, Steffi, thank you so much for joining us today. If you could leave our listeners with two or three things to live by, what would they be?
Yeah, again, shall I repeat? I repeat myself. Brand study. Know your audience. Yep. test new things. You know, be bold in your
approach.
Choose to do something different, you know, from a channel mix perspective, something no one else is doing. That's a bit of my mantra.
No, I think I completely agree. I think here, you know, data, benchmarking data is key. So that's great. Yeah. You know, I think we talked about things being always on and test and learn. Like, always test and learn. Like, if you're not taking this approach, if you're not reviewing your previous campaigns and understanding how to improve them, then where are you at? Because you need to be doing that. So no, thank you so much for these wonderful set of tips today, Steffi. It's been absolutely fantastic to go through the award-winning entry, hopefully award-winning entry we've performed here for Aviva together. Why do you think it deserves to take home the gold, though, is my final question.
Because of work in it, isn't it enough? No, just joking. But I guess it's a great example of a long-term, you know, approach, always on approach. It's a digital first campaign that show agility and the ability to make the most of, obviously, and adapt to the worldwide scenarios. And the result from the brand study actually have proven great uplift in key brand attributes, association, uplift in awareness and consideration, and influence, quite substantial influence on the pipeline generated. So I think numbers talk, and yeah, I think it was the really right approach to this brand building.
Awesome. Well, we hope by the time this goes out, the results won't have been announced. So we are keeping our fingers crossed that we deserve to take home the gold there. But thank you very much for joining us here, Steffi.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.